Welcome to Smashing the Plateau, the podcast for corporate refugees who want to do more of what they love and get paid what they're worth. I'm David Schreiner Kahn, your guide and community builder. Smashing the Plateau is more than just a podcast. We're a platform offering resources, accountability, and camaraderie to high-performing professionals who are making the leap from the corporate career track to entrepreneurial business ownership. If you'd like to learn more about how you can do more of what you love and get paid what you're worth, go to smashingtheplateau.com or email us at info@smashingtheplateau.com.
The act of making small decisions, very energizing, and actually it's a good practice for some bigger decisions I'd need to make, which one of which, of course, was to leave and start something new.
Today's guest is David Lansfield. In our conversation, David and I explore the art of navigating significant professional and personal transitions. You'll hear how to step away from the familiar, ask deeper questions about what truly matters, and create a path that aligns with your values and aspirations. We'll explore actionable approaches for embracing uncertainty, building a supportive network, and finding clarity when the world feels chaotic. Whether you're reconsidering your direction or searching for renewed purpose in your work, David's journey will inspire you to reflect, take action, and move forward with intention. Now let's welcome David Lansfield. David is the founder of Strategy Shift. He's worked with more than 50 CEOs and hundreds of other C-suite executives to design bold strategies, supercharge their leadership, and transform their culture in 20 countries. He's a contributor to Harvard Business Review, MIT Sloan Review, and Strategy and Business, and a guest lecturer at the London Business School. He's a former senior partner in Strategy and at PwC. David, welcome to the show.
Thank you. I'm delighted to be here.
It's great to have you on. So, David, you transitioned from a senior partner in a consultancy to a portfolio career. What was your strategy that made this pivot possible?
Well, hindsight's wonderful. I'll call it a strategy. I wonder if it was at the time. I made partner young at 32 through a combination of luck, great mentorship, and some good work. And I've been a partner for 14 years, and things were fine. They weren't wrong, they weren't broken, but I was probably a little bored, thinking I could do some new things. I've been in the same company from being a postgraduate all the way through. And also, I have a disabled son, and I thought, perhaps I need a little bit more flexibility in my life within the organization to work in the way I wanted to. Clients had no issue, by the way. So there's a combination of a bit of an itch, a bit of a need to do something new, and a bit of a voice in my head saying, let's live in a different way. And it took me a number of years to make the transition, and took me many, many months to make the decision, because leaving what some would call an annuity, i.e. a partnership income, at the age of 46, which is quite rare, unless you're fired, people called it either brave or stupid or something in between.
Yeah. It's interesting how those around us react to these kinds of decisions. I remember when I left my last job, and the linear career move would have been to go to another organization that was slightly bigger in a similar role, or go to a similar size organization in a more senior role, right? That was the expected path. And I said, I think I'm going to be a consultant. And most people I knew thought I was crazy. And like you, I wanted a little more control over how I did what I did, with whom I did it, when I did it, how your work fits in and integrates with your lifestyle. And as a matter of fact, I'm a big believer that work and life need to be integrated. It's not a balance, because if you're trying to balance work and life, something's always out of balance.
Yeah, that's a great way to put it.
Right. I look more to see how we can integrate work and life. And it sounds like you've done the same.
I've tried. And I guess I realized that it's actually a very personal decision. And when you're working for large organizations in intense environments, as consultancies are and many corporates are, as much as you think you're in control, you're actually just part of a big machine. And you only realize that once you step out of it. And so the time to think and the time to actually be create your own agency is often quite limited. And so this was a moment. Probably the jolt of my son's disabilities was probably one of the main triggers to say, what do I actually want from my life? What do I want my career to do for me? As opposed to, as you say, what's the next rung up? How do I make more money? And so forth.
Right. So given the fact that you did make this transition and you did it consciously, and as you said earlier, you hope there was some strategy behind it, but in hindsight, maybe there was more or less. But what would you advise others when it comes to trying to use a strategic approach to your career?
So there is something around looking ahead from where you are, not just a month or 2 months, but a few years, and just ask yourself, what do you want to become? Who do you want to be? What do you want to do? And you don't need to go on a sabbatical to do that. You literally just need to take a moment out, maybe on a walk, sitting on a bench, having a shower, going for a swim, and actually write it down. That sounds old-fashioned, but once you've done that exercise, just write it down on a bit of paper or whatever your favorite device is. And then just take a moment, literally take a deep breath, center yourself and say, okay, how far am I away from that? And I think that's a really important starting point. And then I guess the flip side is, what are my real needs? What are my absolute needs? Whether that's around family, finances, and any other responsibilities. And really ask yourself the question, how much do I really need? Or how much have I imposed on myself? Many people put a straitjacket around themselves because they've created needs that are actually, you know, the fifth car, the third home, and so forth. I exaggerate for a little bit of effect. But actually, that's the flip side. Those are constraints on your ability to then grow and develop and move closer to that aspiration. And the third thing I'd say is finding a small group of people around you who think differently and are willing to challenge you, where you can test some of your thinking, because this is a fragile time, especially if you're successful, you've been in an organization for a long time. Actually, people who won't just say, oh, yes, I agree, they're yes people, or they will tell you what you want to hear. But people who actually will call out some of your blind spots, perhaps give you an angle you haven't thought about. And I did that exercise actually with people where my test was, do I have a hunch of what they're going to say before I ask them? And if I do, I'm not asking the right people. So those are think to the future, ask yourself what you really need and what are they all right now, and then put some people around you. And then I guess the flip side of that is, of course, actually make a decision. Now, the decision might be quite small initially. It might be, let me test my interest in this area around the edges of my existing career, the sort of the hustle or the side project. But it's very easy to find oneself just overthinking, overanalyzing. And after a while, I'm a big fan of doing. So let's test that. I actually spent some time in new places with some new people just to get a sense, and that was coaching for me, to say, does that work for me? And I found the act of making small decisions very energizing. And actually, it's a good practice for some bigger decisions I'd need to make, which one of which, of course, was to leave and start something new.
This is actually a great outline for a strategic process. And when I've seen people go through some or most of these steps, it makes a huge difference in terms of what kinds of outcomes they achieve, how close those outcomes are to what they really want, and how much progress they make at it. So thank you for just kind of summing it up so clearly.
Can I add one more cheekily? Can I add one more? Have I got time to add one more?
Yes.
There is something about not rushing. Unless there is an urgency, i.e. you have some big financial commitments or there's a crisis somewhere, I think most people don't actually have urgency. But the risk, and I found myself doing this at the time, the risk is that you're so used to being on that treadmill that you apply that same pace and that urgency to this decision-making process. So, for example, in the weeks after I actually formally left my previous organisation, I did get some offers. And it was quite tempting to say, oh, perhaps I should join this organisation or start this project. Partly because there was a degree of emptiness. What am I going to do? I've lost all this. I've not got much started. And frankly, it's good for the ego and probably tames the insecurity. But luckily, I had a few friends around me saying, just wait, take your time. And actually, it took me quite a few months to figure out what I was looking for and then start on a new journey. But many people just rush because of that. I think it's actually insecurity. Oh, what if I'm not needed anymore? What if I'm not successful? What if? And when somebody comes to you at that point, when you are vulnerable, it's very easy to make a commitment that actually could limit and often does limit your possibilities and the future chapter that you're looking to open.
Yeah, that's a really important point, and I'm so glad you mentioned it. It reminds me of a conversation I had with a mentor shortly after I started my business. And I was in that place where I was trying to figure out what my identity was going to be, because my identity had been tied to the places that employed me up until then. And again, yeah, all these questions, would I be successful? And he said, one thing to keep in mind is, what would you do? I said, I know you're just starting out, but what would you do if you got an offer from one of the places you're speaking to or somebody else who wants to offer you a job? And it was an interesting question. And, you know, one thing that strikes me in all of this, you've kind of laid out what sounds like a very logical approach to making some really important strategic decisions. At the same time, and yes, you know, not rushing is also important, but at the same time, we're living in a world that seems to be kind of thriving on chaos and complexity right now, politically, economically, lots of other ways. And I'm seeing that people are having a harder time making decisions in general because of all the complexity and the chaos. I wonder what your thoughts are on how our current environment may be challenging to kind of go through this sound strategic thinking when it comes to your career.
Yes. I'd hope it was sound. I mean, it was still messy at times. And that comes to this point of how people are feeling and the clients I work with are feeling, where they're more sensitized. There's more emotions, some of which emotions are around what's going on in the world around them, locally to globally. And for many of them, it feels new. And it's not something they can necessarily just stay silent on, or because one, either the topics are relevant for their business, for example, if they're operating around the world, or if there are people in their businesses who are affected by whatever it is, the geopolitical shifts, the challenges to diversity and inclusion, and the list goes on and on. And I think the challenge is, whilst this has been an undercurrent, now the volume, I'm mixing metaphors, but the volume has been turned up. And for many people, where they have applied a logical, analytical, productivity-driven approach, you know, do more, think more, act faster, that doesn't work when people can't give or won't give as much as they can. So what that means is asking more questions of the people around you. What's, you know, not necessarily deep questions, but what's going on in your world? You know, how can I serve you? Actually going to more of a questioning mode. And then at times, contrary to how it feels, where you think, I need to make a call on this because it's fast and everything's changing, widening the net of people who can not only share their concerns, but also people who can see opportunities. And I don't always think of commercial opportunities, but when there is chaos and complexity, it creates spaces. And we use my strategy hat, there are spaces for people to move into, both within organizations, whether that's within society. And so you need people who can, either because they have gone through something similar before, or they have a very positive, resilient mindset, think, I'm not immune to what's going on, but if we were doing our best work, how could we show up? Where would we focus? And how would we stand out? And I think it's being alive to what's going on, but then harnessing it into an approach which is progressive and it's positive.
Yeah, and that's sound advice as well. One of the things that I see playing out, especially for those consultants that may be thinking about how they can serve and what kinds of questions they can ask in this time of complexity and chaos, but one of the things I'm seeing play out is they're reaching out to either prospects, referral sources, current clients, past clients, and not getting much in the way of responses.
No kidding. I'm not surprised.
Right. Things like, you know, projects aren't getting renewed. A project that may have been in discussion is now in discussion for a longer period of time. And suddenly there's radio silence. what are your thoughts about how, from the consultant's perspective, the kind of breakthrough, the indecision and lack of communication on the side of the people they can help?
So there's a starting point, which is, it's not surprising that's happening. So in a way, get over yourself. Because I think some consultants think, I have a God-given right to be relevant to this organization. And these people have got too much on. So it's, in a way, how can you be the most valuable in the easiest possible way? So, i.e., how can you come forward with an idea or a proposition that actually feels fresh, feels new, feels distinctive, even if it's, you know, formed in an early version, but you position it as, we've been working together for quite a while now. I recognize there's a lot going on. I've got an idea that I think could really accelerate this or reduce risk or reduce cost. So it's very focused on outcomes and you do it in a way that's easy to digest. Too often consultants may have the best idea around, or they think they do, but they demand so much from a client. I was a client many times. Oh, I need a half an hour meeting or an hour meeting. I need you to read this 50-page document. It's like, okay, like a newspaper headline. Give me the headline in a paragraph or less of the idea and put some personality in it, especially if these people are feeling anxious, maybe feeling down under considerable pressure. How can you inject some personality where people think, oh, God, that's brought maybe a smile, maybe, you know, a positive feeling, not necessarily humour or a joke that may be inappropriate. But if you as a consultant can think about how you can create value, how you can package your idea in a really simple way and inject a bit of personality, I think you're likely to get an audience.
Now, on the flip side, for the CEOs and senior leaders inside organizations that are reacting to the chaos and complexity and are feeling like it's more challenging than ever to make a decision, where are you seeing that they most need expertise?
So there are some that are in genuine crises, or in whether they directly realize it or not, i.e. hemorrhaging cash, markets that are now not open, not just, for example, cybersecurity risks. They need people who've been in those situations and frankly can take the reins and help them. There's some clients like that. I think others need somebody who can play the role of not only being a listener to what's going on from them and within their systems that they operate in, but can play a bit of an architect role. They may have a view, this client may have a view about what's going on in their business, some things that are broken, some of the opportunities, but they need somebody who can work with them as a curator, as an architect, to try and build something that at least moves them forward in the next 6 months. And that role of both the interpretation, the architect, and then, okay, so what are our first moves? I think that is a very powerful, and that may be around, look, we've got sluggish growth, we need to really drive the top line. It may be we've got a very heavy cost base and it's not working in markets that are not paying us anymore. I need to take out some costs. What I think they don't need as much is very large teams of people coming in to, if you like, to take the problem away from them, do all of the work, present it beautifully, and then hand over at the end as a caricature of many large consulting firms. And I was probably guilty of this. There are moments like big M&A deal, big crises, big restructuring where that's relevant. For many of the time, they need somebody senior and experienced who can play that role, who can guide them, and very importantly, enable them rather than dictate to them. And I think that may sound, oh, David, well, that sounds like a good role. Well, I think many consultants are not wired or incentivized to do that. They're wired incentivized to produce a lot, to do a lot, and to leverage a lot. And at this time, if you're a client, I don't think you want the big responsibility of large organizations around you, because that carries risk and fear and also a feeling of what happens after they go, which is often the case where, you know, performance dips because the consultant has not embedded the capability and the energy into the organization. To be clear, I'm not down on the industry. I'm a big fan of it. I have many friends in it. But I think in this environment, the role of consultants needs to be much more outcome focused, much more enablement focused, and frankly be sensitive to the load that these clients have on them.
Right, which means that it could be a good opportunity for somebody who has a solopreneur consulting business, especially if they're looking for ongoing fractional work.
Yes, and actually fractional work, and I think many of the CEOs, chairs, and other C-suite executives realize at some point they'll need consultants to help them with some big effort. But in the early days of their thinking, or in the immediate challenges they have, having somebody or somebodies close to them who they can be open with, who know that they're not there to sell large programs of work, can feel refreshing. And I think the challenge of the consultant is they need to wear multiple hats at often similar times. Sometimes the mentor, sometimes the coach, sometimes the advisor, as opposed to my role is I am the subject matter expert on this topic. I think many clients want somebody who's a little bit more nimble in the moment and who can play different hats and wear different hats and in a way have different personalities and shades in the conversation.
Which makes a lot of sense. David, I want to go back to something you mentioned earlier about connecting with thinking partners. And you mentioned, if I know what they'll say, I'm asking the wrong people. Can you elaborate a little more on how you've tapped into community for your own success?
Yeah, so having people who are friends is important, people who their default response is yes, who give you a warm welcome, that's important. But then there are other people where being clear about what they give to you and what you give back to them. So there are people I know on particular subjects and topics, they're my go-to people, and I hope I am the same to them. There are also people who, if you like, have a belief in me, whether it's right or wrong, in what I can achieve, and they are willing to open up their own networks, their own practices, recognizing that I'm not going to betray that trust, and they are, if you like, they're givers. And so at different stages of my career, having people around me who are both supportive and challenging and catalytic has been really important. And the thing one realizes often with hindsight is you have to keep investing in it. There are so many people, and I have to say at the moment is the case when people, as you just eloquently described, are feeling fragile and often chaotic. They just assume that if they haven't kept in touch for 10 years and given nothing to you and not form your part of a group, that you will just open your doors and open your everything to them at a moment's notice. And the reality is, unless you nurture it, unless you give back yourself, and unless they're in distress, you're not going to. So that investment in community has been important to me, and having a range of people and a range of people who are frankly are just good people who look beyond a title, a role, how much money one has made, who just want to do good work and be good people. And by the way, that's not the same as being the same people, because some of the good people, we have different preferences, styles and so on. I don't have the same sense of humour, although clearly as a Brit, my sense of humour is brilliant. I joke, I jest. But just people who are good to be around. You know, you leave the conversation, you leave the interaction feeling just that bit better, even if they've given you a hard message.
Well said. David, we've covered a lot of territory in a short amount of time. If someone wants to go deeper with anything you've shared today, want to access any resources you have, learn more about you, get in touch with you, where's the best place for them to go?
So I'm active on LinkedIn, David C. Lancefield. They can come to my sites, which has a lot of resources, many free resources. So that's strategyshift.co.uk, or my personal site, which is davidlancefield.com. Or they can reach out direct. And unimaginatively, my email is david@davidlancefield.com.
Sounds great. Well, David, thank you so much for taking the time to join us today on Smashing the Plateau and share a little bit about your experiences and some great advice for others who are trying to do similar kinds of work. My guest today has been the founder of Strategy Shift, David Lancefield. Thank you, David, for joining us.
Thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you for taking the time to listen to this episode of Smashing the Plateau. Our mission is empowering people like you to do more of what you love and get paid what you're worth. Help us spread the message that you can connect passion with profit. Please share this episode with a friend, share it on LinkedIn, and leave us a review on your favorite podcast platform. I wish you much success in smashing your plateau. See you on our next episode.